Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Geek Steep. My name is Marika.
And my name is Kelly.
How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm tired. But I'm good. I'm just exhausted.
I can imagine you have just come back from a trip that was not terribly long, but
a week and a half-ish.
Yeah, a week and a half. But was filled with adventure, tea adventure.
It was so fun. So I did a couple days in Vancouver and then closer to a week in Victoria. I think it was like 6 days in Victoria. So I was there with my mom. The last couple of years, we've had this like ping pong of she'll come to Montreal, or, you know, I went back for the holidays a few years ago to Saskatchewan. But it's a long distance to cover. You know, neither of us have driven because it would be ridiculous, but to help contextualize, it's a 30-hour nonstop drive.
Yeah.
So we're covering a huge distance
here. Right.
The plane tickets aren't cheap.
Right, yeah.
You could travel to Europe for cheaper than you can travel within your own country from, like, Quebec to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. It's wild. Which is probably why I've never been to Saskatchewan. No offense. It's just never had the money.
So this year we were like, no, let's meet somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you know, have, like, a proper vacation. And we picked BC because, honestly, it's just this, like, cultural hub and, like, tea hotspot within Canada. You know, we've talked, I think, in the past, both, you know, on podcast, off podcast, about, like, in the States, if you want, like, a boom in, like, tea culture, you're probably going to, like, Chicago, New York, right? In Canada, it's fucking Vancouver.
Yeah, right?
It is so, so diverse there, just in terms of, like, tea companies that exist. And I had such a fun time touring the tea companies in Vancouver and in Victoria, but we did 12 tea shops in total, I want to say. 3 tea houses, so like afternoon tea, more like British style. We visited Westholme, which is the tea farm outside of Victoria, Canada's only tea farm.
It's so cool. It's so cool that you... I'm going to stop you. Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
Okay, so Westholme produces tea, grows tea in Canada. What's that like? Sorry, just like, what's the feel? What's the vibe? What does the air smell like? I know that sounds like a weird question, but I'm deeply fascinated.
I mean, it just smells so fresh.
Mm.
Now, they are a small farm. They have, I guess to help contextualize, like, we walked the tea field that they had in about 15 minutes.
Okay.
So, like, it is pretty small, but, like, it's beautiful. I got to touch tea leaves, like, fresh tea leaves. I touch tea leaves every day, but, you know, you know, from the bush, I got to pluck my own tea leaves. You know, I made pocket tea over the course of the day.
I'm sure, yes.
And it just was very cool. The owner and the producer, Victor, was a really great host. He was very interesting to talk to. And, you know, they have a little ceramic studio as well on the property. So, very interesting getting to try Canadian-grown tea and then pick up, you know, some ceramics and just really cool.
So can you order from Westholme online? This is not a plug for Westholme, okay? This is just me. Because I think it takes an immense amount of ingenuity, courage, just a lot to say, you know what? Let's grow this typical Asiatic plant in North America. How about we do it in North America? You know what I mean? Like, and to have your own ceramic studio, like, that just sounds so unbelievably cool and trailblazing.
Yeah, so you can buy online from them. They've been there over a decade now. They've been selling tea closer to, I think, like 9 years, he said. So, you know, they were growing well before they started selling, just, you know, refining and learning. But, you know, they've gone through a lot. They had several cold snaps, really harsh winters, mm-hmm. where they thought all of the plants had died, and those plants just sprung back and they kept producing.
I don't think I could handle that kind of stress of, like, looking at the weather. And I mean, yeah, that's, more power to them. That's just so, I'm in awe. I'm in awe. And you got to touch a tea leaf. That's so cool. I haven't done that in like, oh, I want to say like 10 years, like visit a tea plantation. But like it, when the picture came up on Insta of you holding the tea leaf, my brain broke for a second because it looked like you could have been anywhere but Canada. And I knew for a fact you were in Canada, and I knew you were going there. It wasn't like, what? She didn't tell me. No, I knew for a fact you were going there, but it's just like that classic, like, two leaves and a bud shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And to see it on your feed with, like, your hand for a moment, I had a complete disconnect. And it was just awesome to realize that you were there in contact with the OG leaf. Like, that's so fun.
It's a huge bucket list moment.
I'm so happy for you. Okay, I interrupted you there because I was like, West Holm, tell me everything. But, like, do you want to... I don't know, because do you want to talk about the Vancouver tea scene in general? Because I've only been to Vancouver once or maybe twice. I was there for a few hours on layover. And even during those layovers, you couldn't walk 20 feet without walking into a tea shop. I went before like Google Maps. I was there by accident for 8 hours. And I think I personally visited 5 different tea shops without knowing where I was going and just walking the streets of Vancouver. So I thought it was me. I felt like the universe was directing me to these tea shops. But after having spoken to you, it seems like they are just tea nuts out there.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even go to every shop in Vancouver. I wish we had spent a couple more days there in hindsight. I think we felt a little rushed in Vancouver compared to Victoria.
Okay.
But most of the shops we went to were in Vancouver, and they skew incredibly on the like traditional Gong Fu side as well, which is really unique, you know, not just in general, because it is unique in general. If you're finding a tea shop in Canada, statistically, it's probably like blended teas, you know, Western style flavored. They just outrepresent, just in general. But no, the majority of shops in Vancouver are like Chinese import teas, traditional teas, Gong Fu style brewing. And I think it's because With no statistics to back this up, but just loose knowledge of Canada's history and you know, an understanding of tea culture in general, because there's a massive Asian population in BC. It's a immigration hub. It's an immigration hub. And, you know, part of that is because of the history of enslavement of Chinese people in BC to build the railroads there, which is, of course, awful.
Yeah, I think there's a long and horrible tradition in Canada about not talking about our history in that way and acknowledging that there have been many, many groups that have, you know, immigrated to Canada or who were here before immigrants arrived to Canada that have been mistreated. We're working on it. We're not doing great, but we're doing something. I'm not excusing that. Just saying that Canada is a giant melting pot of so many, so many different cultures. And I think, I mean, just, you know, having, like I said, been to Vancouver for a total of 8 hours and having been to BC and seeing the kind of mix of cultures there, the immigrant population in Vancouver, be it immigrant population recent or, you know, 100 years back, is very, very different from what we have here on the East Coast. It's like two different nations.
I would agree. And I think that's why you see a lot more Chinese influence, not just, you know, in tea shops, but obviously greatly in tea shops. Mm-hmm. They've informed the tea culture in that province immensely, but just in general, you know, the amount of specialty shops is different. And it's very interesting seeing how history has influenced the just type of shops that exist.
It sounds like a tea lover's dream. And I hope I can go there soon, because it's like, your trip has, like, refueled my interest in a city that, even without tea, a province even without tea, is just so beautiful and so fascinating and so different from, you know, East Coast Canada that I want to go. But now, even more so. Like, I really, really need to go. So before, thank you for your recap, honestly. I appreciate it. But before we move on to anything else, what's in your cup, Kelly?
So as I said, I am tired today. So I'm drinking a tea called Superberry Samba.
Okay. Superberry Zomba?
Samba. S-A-M-B-A. So okay. Like the dance, I guess.
Yeah.
Superberry dance. It's a tea bag. You know, it was just convenient and easy, and my brain was like, yes, good, one step. And it's from a company called Zest Tea, which does caffeine-boosted teas. So It's like a mixed berry profile, leaning a little more strawberry, I would say. But it's like 130 milligrams of caffeine in a tea bag, and, you know, I'll take the boost.
I think we could all use the boost.
I've got their entire range, but I picked this one because it was just like, Superberry, yeah, sure, that's close enough to on theme and, you know, exactly what I need right now.
Perfect. I am drinking a green tea, which is not usually what I drink at all. But fortunately, you just got a new order in from Silk Road Tea Company, and I'm drinking Eyes of Green, and I smelled about 20 teas from your order. I'm saying 20. It could have been 10, but it was a lot. It was a lot of teas, and I needed something really specific, yet I had no idea what that was, because I am in a fucking shitty mood today. Let me tell you. When you just wake up on the wrong side of the motherfucking bed. That is me today. And I needed... I was just going through your assortment of teas. And you're like, oh, can I help you? And I was like, not really, because I don't know what I'm looking for. And this tea, Eyes of Green, really hitting the spot. Really, really hitting the spot.
It's probably... So the order I just got in was from the Silk Tea Co., MJ just released a new collection called the Passport Collection, which is all single origin oolongs. I think they're all from Taiwan, but if not all, the majority of them are. And because I hadn't ordered from her in a while, I got, you know, the collection, which was new and exciting, and also just a bag of everything else I hadn't tried before. So this is not a new tea, even though it's a recent order. But I'm kind of disappointed that I've been missing out on it, because it was the first flavored one from that order that I steeped up for myself. And it's good.
It's really good. It's lemon pistachio cream on a green and black tea base. It's got a hint of cardamom. It's got that lemon in there. It's got a meringue quality, but pistachio based. Now, everything about this cup fucking works. It works. I'm delighted. I don't know that it works at all with our fandom for today, but I could not care less, because it has, along with the fact that we're about to have a really fun discussion, that we're having a fun discussion over a cup of tea, and that always makes me feel much, much better about life in general. It's got, like, just a brightness and a comfort level, this tea, that is just perfect for this shitty mood that I'm in. So, thank you for sharing this with me. Perfect. Anything else before we get to the inexplicable?
I mean, I want to talk about Spider-Man.
Oh my god! You guys!
Because of course I do. If Marika gets to geek out about all of the cool new upcoming Trek things on non-Trek episodes, I feel like I get to talk about Spider-Verse.
I think you absolutely get to talk about Spider-Verse. 1000% get to talk about Spider-Verse. But beyond the fact that you are a Spider-Man fan, this film, and I use the word film very specifically here, needs to be discussed by absolutely everyone all the time. I was transported by that movie. Absolutely. Stop what you're doing. Stop listening to the podcast. Go buy your tickets and watch this movie immediately because you need to see it on the big screen. I'm hogging this moment, that's Kelly, okay. but it's art.
It's really, it's art. Really breathtakingly beautiful. The story is incredible. I mean, it's an evolution from the first one. The first one was already fucking fantastic. Like,
this is just, like, modern. I don't know. Remember I kept telling you after I saw it, I said, it's like watching a Basquiat live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an art connoisseur, but I think probably because Basquiat is like that mixed media, you know, artistic expression of like the black experience in America in the 70s and 80s, that kind of punk rock aesthetic as well that went along with his work. Like, it just, the whole time I was like, I should be in a museum right now. This feels like this should be watched in a museum right now. The argument that comic books are not art is dead. Yeah. Anybody who ever says that again, I will be like, just watch. And the first movie was incredible. Let's be clear. The first movie was visually stunning, fantastic story, lots of fun. This one, I feel like I genuinely believe it needs to be shown in like classrooms. I'm not even joking.
It's such a love letter to not just Spider-Man, but comics in general. So I think I can safely say I've read a lot more Spider-Man comics than you have.
1,000%. Yes.
And even like things I'm curious about. So we got to see Spider-Gwen or Spider-Girl, but her universe for the first time, like in depth, and the animation style there is different. Did you like recognize or realize that it's directly modeled after her comics? Like all of the watercolor?
Yes.
Yes. Because I saw some people who just like had never read the comics and didn't understand like the choice. And it's just, I don't know, like that level of attention to detail. Things were like ripped like directly out of the comics. But then also there were like brand new things not referenced in the comics at all. But just with such attention to detail to be like the perfect homage that it could have been right on the screen. You know, we had new spiders that were introduced, like Hobie. And that was really interesting because Hobie's comics don't necessarily have a super unique art style. And so they had to create one and craft one to match the character. And oh my God.
No, it's amazing. I've obviously been reading a lot about it because it's one of those movies that like you see it and you need to understand more. And they were saying that in punk rock publications in England in the late 70s, early 80s, they would frequently run out of ink. And so the color scheme of these magazines would change from the first page to the last. And that's why like his image changes colors so often. Mm-hmm. It's like the level of detail and thought and respect to the aesthetic. And they could have just made it aesthetically beautiful and it would be amazing on its own just for that. But then they gut punch you with stories that make you think, that make you hurt, that make you cry, that make you love, that make you soar, that make you feel great. It's just before the credits roll, you're already destroyed emotionally.
Yeah, like, it's a good movie.
It's such a good movie.
They also had like so many middle fingers in that movie to just like the art industry, like the corporate art industry. Yes. In general.
Yeah.
My favorite being the fucking balloon animal dog in the opening.
Yes.
Fight scene that made my heart happy.
Yeah. I just looked up over my microphone and I am seeing your Lego Spider-Man looking right back up at me. There is a Lego Spider-Man sequence that will make your heart soar.
Did you know that it was done by a 14-year-old?
Did you know that 14-year-old was Canadian?
Yeah.
I know. We're both just geeking out with each other with information we have. It's so cool. Because he did the original trailer. He recreated the original trailer with Lego, right? And mm-hmm. then they hired him to do this sequence. And it's one of the coolest sequences I've ever seen in my life. So good.
So yeah, go watch Spider-Man.
Go watch Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It's so excellent. So excellent. What a hard transition we're about to make from what is, I will say it, I do think Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is, at the moment of recording, the best superhero movie I've ever seen. I can say that without really thinking about it. Or not thinking about it, but I don't need to reflect on that very long. It is single-handedly the best superhero movie I've ever seen. And now we're pivoting into not the best superhero movie I've ever seen. So do you want to tell everybody what we're doing today, Kelly?
Today, we are talking about Fantastic Four. Specifically, the 2005 Fantastic Four. Please tell me I got the date right.
You did get the date right. It was 2005. It was a different time for everyone, wasn't it? Let's see. What was 2005 like? We had the X-Men films that had come out. The X-Men films that had reignited our passion as a population with the superhero movie. Before that, superhero movies were like sporadic. We'd had, of course, Christopher Reeve's Superman. We'd had Michael Keaton's Batman. But then we had that time in the 90s where it was like all these superheroes that no one had ever like fucking heard of, like the Phantom and the Mask. And like it was underground comic books, the 90s. And then X-Men came out in 99, and it was like, okay, let's go back to, like, superhero movies. And that was the beginning of this 20-year journey that we've been on now.
And I was in, like, 7th grade.
Ah, of course you were. How could we forget? And I was well into my 20s. So, I don't know. When this movie came out, did you know who the Fantastic Four were? Did you know?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Nothing.
And I didn't see it in theaters or anything like that. I very clearly remember, like, when I first watched it, and we got it as part of a, like, double feature, buy one, get one DVD, where it was the first X-Men movie and the first Fantastic Four in one DVD in, like, the bargain bin in, like, a Walmart.
Okay.
And it was very cheap, and, you know, we were like, oh, two movies for the price of half of one.
Yeah, kind of vibe. Okay.
And I remember my brother and I watched both of them in, like, our basement back-to-back, and I definitely preferred X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, okay, I'll go into how I came into contact with this before I do What the Geek, because I feel like even if you don't know Fantastic Four, you've heard the name, because this is Marvel's first family. This was like, along with X-Men and Spider-Man, it was the biggest success Marvel had in the 60s was with Fantastic Four. And so even if I have read very few actual Fantastic Four comics, they prop up everywhere. They pop up in Spider-Man, they pop up yep. in X-Men, they prop up in Avengers, they pop up in any big multiverse kind of crossover whatever things going on at Marvel. They are absolutely the first family of Marvel, and I have just never liked them. And it's not like I dislike them. I've never been particularly drawn to them in any significant way. And when this movie came out in 2005, I was like, okay, I'm finally going to understand why everybody loves Fantastic Four. And that is not what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like aside from the now movies, which, you know, I've watched and have filled in, like, some gaps, almost all of my exposure to them is, like you said, by proxy in other comics. Fantastic Four are pretty reoccurring in a lot of, like, older Spider-Man comics. Yes. So most of my knowledge comes from there. Doctor Doom has popped up as a villain in also several comics. So I almost feel like I understand the villains more than the characters, which is a really interesting take to have.
Yeah, I know all of their superficial or, like, more prominent qualities, and nothing really has ever interested me about that. But let me do What the Geek, and then we can dive into 2005's Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four is a superhero team appearing in American comic books published by Marvel. The team debuted in Fantastic Four number 1 in November 1961, helping usher in a new level of realism in the medium. It was the first superhero team created by artist, co-plotter Jack Kirby, and editor, co-scripter Stan Lee. And through this title that the Marvel Method style of production came into prominence. The four characters traditionally associated with the Fantastic Four, who gained superpowers after exposure to cosmic rays during a scientific mission to outer space, are Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, a scientific genius and the leader of the group who can stretch his body into incredible lengths and shapes. The Invisible Woman, Susan Sue Storm Richards, Reed's girlfriend and later wife, who can render herself invisible and project powerful invisible force fields and blasts. The Human Torch, Johnny Storm, Sue's younger brother, who can generate flames, surround himself with them, and fly. And the monstrous Thing, Ben Grimm, their grumpy but benevolent friend, a former college football star, Reed's college roommate, and a skilled pilot who possesses tremendous superhuman strength, durability, and endurance due to his stone-like flesh. Since their 1961 introduction, the Fantastic Four has been portrayed as somewhat dysfunctional yet loving family. Breaking convention with other comic archetypes, the members squabbled, held grudges both deep and petty, and eschewed anonymity or secret identities in favor of celebrity status. They are also well known for their recurring encounters with characters such as the villainous monarch Dr. Doom, the planet-devouring Galactus, the Kree Empire's ruthless and tyrannical enforcer Ronan the Accuser, the Negative Zone's ruler Annihilus, the sea-dwelling Prince Namor, the spacefaring Silver Surfer, and the Skrull warrior Klaatu. I cannot pronounce that. The Fantastic Four have been adapted into other media, including several video games, animated series, and live-action films. Now, the live-action film is what we're discussing here, an American superhero film directed by Tim Story and released by 20th Century Fox. The film stars Ion Gruffudd, really hope I'm pronouncing that even remotely correctly, Jessica Alba, Chris Evans, Michael Chiklis, Julian McMahon, and Kerry Washington. This was the second live-action Fantastic Four film to be filmed. A previous attempt titled The Fantastic Four was a B-movie produced by Roger Corman that ultimately went unreleased. Fantastic Four was released in the United States on July 8, 2005, and despite receiving generally mixed reviews from critics, it grossed over $333 million worldwide and was a box office success. A sequel, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, was released in 2007. A reboot was released in 2015, and I believe that Phase 5 of Marvel that we now know is planning a release in 2025 for the yet again rebooted Fantastic Four.
I mean, third time's the charm. Worked for Spider-Man.
It kind of did.
I mean, controversial statement, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think, okay, let's talk about it. Yeah, because this film was released with X-Men. It was also released at the same time as the Spider-Man films. And even though I was not a fan of Spider-Man at the time, Spider-Man 2 is arguably...
It's great.
It's a great fucking movie. I have rewatched it several times. It holds up. It's a really, really good movie. I have rewatched this movie, Fantastic Four, several times as well, but I feel like I watch it because every time I watch it, I'm trying to determine if it's good, bad, or really bad, and I can never make up my mind. It's something, isn't it?
It's good, bad.
It's
good, bad.
It's like this constant bait and switch. It's like it's good, then it's bad, then it's good. Then it's good, bad. Then it's bad, good. One minute could be cool. The next could be shitty. Then it's unbearably uncomfortable. Then it's funny. Like, the pacing is wild on this one. And I can never decide what it is.
I mean, we said it just a few moments ago pre-recording, but I feel like this is a superhero movie that's trying to figure out what superhero movies are. And that's kind of why when we were building out our outline, we knew we wanted, like, Marvel content, because who the fuck are we, you know? Of course we were like, let's stack the deck and put in some more MCU stuff. You know?
For sure.
It's one of the few things that generally we're, like, absolutely on board with, totally agree. But trying to balance that out, I was really intrigued to do, like, a superhero, a Marvel superhero movie before, like, the MCU.
Yes.
Because that's a whole different ballgame.
It really is. I think they didn't know why we liked superhero movies. I think they thought, I don't know what they thought. I don't know what to make of this movie. I really don't, Kelly. It's, okay, so it's the origin story. We meet them as they are human, and they are going up to a space station to study, like, a cosmic storm. And something goes wrong, and that's how they gain their powers. Let's start with the fact that I don't understand why half of the characters on that space station are there. A, there's only five of them. They have no support crew. They have no... Mm-hmm. No help. We don't see them get to the space station. We're just made to believe that, you know, this kind of space travel is regular and normal and possible for them. And it is literally the Fantastic Four and the person who eventually becomes Dr. Doom are alone on this space station when they get hit by cosmic rays. Okay, work through the logic of this. You're only sending five people to a space station to study a rare spatial occurrence.
Well, here's the first asterisk. Technically, you're only sending three people to study it. Two of them are pilots.
Yes! Okay, so that's what I wanted to get to, where I'm like, okay, so Reed Richards, smartest man in the Marvel Universe, so therefore smartest man in this movie. Victor, who becomes the villain eventually, owns the space station. So, okay, fair enough.
Also, we are led to believe he's not just a businessman. He is also quite smart.
Quite smart and has a background in science. Sue Storm, at this point, has been working for Victor and also it has several PhDs, I believe, we're led to believe. And they're followed by her brother, who's a pilot.
I mean, that's just nepotism.
And Ben Grimm, who is a former football player, Reed Richards' best friend from high school, who's also a pilot.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's framed is that Ben is definitely the qualified pilot.
Right.
He's, you know, the good one. And Johnny is there because nepotism. And they don't like each other, and so that's a fun dynamic.
Yeah, it's a fun dynamic, but they're not actually... We don't understand, like, what they're doing there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why, in a movie where I can totally believe that a cosmic storm can alter the DNA of five people and turn them into the five elements of a planet they're not currently occupying, I believe that, and yet... Having two pilots there who have never been to space, who are not qualified for this sort of thing, be on that station was the first thing that just annoyed the shit out of me. I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But that's lifted from, essentially, from the 1960s cartoon, comic book. So this movie oscillates with wanting to be, like, new and innovative and, like, respecting canon. And I think that's where it fails a lot of the time. It's respecting canon that is so outdated mm-hmm. as to no longer make sense.
It does, like, I'm on board with only three, like, scientists, because how many people do we send to space for, like, you know, exploration or whatever? Not a lot.
No.
Like, that shit's expensive, you know?
Exactly.
Like, they're not sending 30 people up there. We can't afford that shit.
No.
And I think that's why the pilot thing bugs me the most, where I'm like... No, they should have gone through years of training.
I feel like it's easier to train someone to be a pilot for a very specific flight than it is to have the expense associated with having a pilot on a space station who's like, well, my job's done. I'm just going to sit here drinking Mai Tais while you guys do your research and we're ready to head back to Earth. So that's what I mean when this movie goes from, like, good to bad, where I'm just like, okay, this is good. This is fine. They're going to go get their powers. But why are you two here? Why are the two of you here? That doesn't make any sense. Okay, they get their powers. They return to Earth and all seems normal.
Ish.
Ish. No, but I mean, they're still human. They don't know they have powers yet, right?
Well, I mean, they're concerned about Ben. They get back to Earth, but it kicks off with, like, Ben in the hospital. Like,
yeah, but he hasn't transformed yet.
Hasn't transformed, but, like, things aren't fine.
No, they are monitoring everybody's symptoms. They are in a hospital setting, but generally they feel relatively unscathed. And then it slowly begins that they realize they have powers. So Reed is Mr. Fantastic and he's super elastic and Sue becomes invisible, but only when she's naked. Not going to unpack that. Just going to leave that there for everybody. Johnny becomes the Human Torch and Ben becomes the Thing. Ben as the Thing, or not Ben, or Michael Chiklis as the Thing, is the best thing about this movie.
100% agree. One, graphically, or like, you know, prop makeup, what costume design, anyway.
Yeah.
People know what I mean. That shit holds up so well. It, like, way better than it has any right to. Especially given that Mr. Fantastic's CGI, horrible, like, nightmare fuel.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we didn't talk about this before. We talked about the Thing. So, yeah, but the Thing's makeup holds up. It's very good. You can see expression. You can see emotion. Michael Chiklis does an amazing job. The character makes sense. It all checks every box. And then, yeah, Mr. Fantastic's superpower is deeply disturbing, like body dysmorphia, nightmare, uncanny valley fucking fuel, man. Like, it's awful, awful. And I don't think the actor sells it.
No.
It's not his fault, but he doesn't sell it. I don't believe that this is happening for a freaking second, right? Sue Storm. I have major issues with this woman, okay? She is supposed to be super intelligent, very qualified, incredibly educated, and yet the writers in this movie have given her lines that make no sense. At one point, and I don't know why I got so stuck on this line, Kelly, at one point, she's trying to talk to Reed about their feelings, about their emotions, and he's not getting it. He's just kind of blind to it, and she goes, "Oh, you don't understand anything unless it's explained to you in quantum physics. Explain to you in quantum physics. What does that mean?
This line does not bug me nearly as much.
It bugs the shit out of me because, you know what? It's a stupid line, and it's a line that I would say. As a non-scientific person, as someone who barely has an understanding of these concepts, I would say you needed to have it explained to you in quantum physics and know that that's wrong, but know that the person I'm talking to understands what I mean. This woman's supposed to have, like, multiple PhDs. That's not the kind of slip-up that that character makes.
I mean, they're in a fight. I can understand. That line, I feel like, is not, like, the one that shatters the illusion for me. Because I buy pissed off, bitter, like, in the heat of the moment, saying stupid thing, but, like, getting your point across. I think anyone does that. That's just human. But I do fully agree that they do not sell that this woman is a competent scientist.
No.
Especially sorry, I cut you off, but there's this, like, weird, not training montage, because that's not the right word for it.
Right.
It's not a training montage. But in the, like, middle of the movie, there's this, like, research montage, yes. I guess is the better word, where they're trying to, like, figure out and understand their powers. And, like, that woman's not helping.
No.
She's not proving that she understands anything that Reed's doing. You know, she seems very much just, like, along for the ride. And I don't know. I fail to believe that Reed is attracted to this woman for her intelligence.
Absolutely. Because one of the few times that I've read the comic, the only person who's able to stand up to Reed and to make him make sense is Sue. And it's because A, she loves him, but more importantly, B, she understands the science behind it and she can, you know, confront him on that. He respects her because they are essentially equals. He may be more driven than her, slightly madder than her, but they didn't sell that in this movie. They really worked on the emotional foil that is that character of like, oh, if you would just share your emotions with me, we could be together. And Kelly, it annoyed me to no fucking end that yet again, the woman has put her heart out there, and if he could just change a little, oh, they could be so happy together. Gross. Other thing that's gross, let's talk about the Human Torch. Now, I think the Human Torch's powers are super cool. I wish I could fly and burst into flames. That looks fantastic.
I think it's fine.
Chris Evans there is very weird because he's Captain America now, so you see his face and you see Captain America. But he's playing this, what is it? Like, not bad boy, but...
He's a fuck boy. He's a total fuck boy. That's the word
I'm looking for. Fuck boy. He plays a giant fuck boy in this movie. And it's incredibly annoying. The amount of shit that he gets away with completely unscathed. Also validating my love of the Thing, because the only person who ever calls him on it is the Thing.
So this was the first time I watched this movie in probably a decade, and I vaguely remembered it, but I kept waiting, because he would just say these awful, awful, totally non-empathetic, cruel things to the Thing. Just like the worst thing you could possibly say to a person in that situation. And like, to your earlier point, Ben Grimm is, pun not intended, the emotional rock of this movie.
Yes!
And I kept waiting for the end of the movie, like, apology, or I've learned my lesson, or I won't, like... And it just doesn't come. There's no emotional growth for this character.
None.
So I was willing to forgive the, like, intolerable prick at the start of the movie, because clearly, you know, they're a team, they're a family, right? There's gonna be some emotional payoff, some lesson learned. Nope. It flat out ends with him again targeting the Thing.
Yes, and he keeps getting away with it, and everyone else is like, Johnny, stop it. Nobody just like slaps him across the face and goes, hey, you need to quit this. This is unprofessional. This is cruel. This is unnecessary. This is not moving anything forward. And like when Johnny gets upset, what does he do? He storms off. Ha ha ha. But he walks off and he goes to a random motorcycle chase rally thing, signs up and does a spectacular trick in front of everyone. Like, it's stupid. Like, everything this character does is profoundly idiotic. And it annoys me because it's such a cool power. Like, I want to be able to fly on, you know, whilst being engulfed in flames. I feel like that would be a super cool way to travel. Just me?
I feel like it's a fire hazard waiting to happen.
Oh, yes, and absolutely. Like,
that's not the person I want, you know, with the capability of, like, starting forest fires and burning apartment complexes down.
Especially in this current climate of forest fires, yes, maybe.
Yeah.
Only you can prevent forest fires, and wishing to be the Human Torch is part of that, right? I should stop? Okay, fair enough.
Flight is cool.
Flight is cool.
Flight while uncontrollably on fire, no.
Okay, agree to disagree.
So I want to backpedal just a moment, because like, we're talking about a lack of empathy on the Human Torch's part, but I want to talk about this lack of empathy the entire group has towards Victor Doom, because man's not okay. And let's be honest, I think really he's a villain that they created.
They did. Okay, thank you. Okay, because that's the thing. They come back to Earth. They have these powers. They're like, oh my god. They move in together, the four of them, into this Baxter building. And Reed Richards is like, I'm going to fix this, you guys. I'm going to study it. I'm going to build a machine. And we're all going to be okay. This entire time that all of this is happening, we are now at like minute 47 of this movie. At no point in time has any of these characters gone, hey, Victor, you were on the space station with us. We're all having really weird things happen to us. We're turning into fire and rocks and stretching. How are you? Are you okay? Did anything happen to you? Would you like to join us in this quest of research because you also have a background in science? No, not once. Not once do they reach out to Victor and just simply, like, text him, brah, you good?
And, like, he is outlined from the start of the movie to not be the greatest guy. Like, he's kind of an asshole. He's definitely competitive with Reed. Like, they have a very...
scientific alpha male, like,
yeah,
like, circle jerk thing happening.
Very much like this, like, toxic competitive masculinity, but make it nerdy, like, vibe.
Yeah.
But dude does not deserve the treatment he gets. Like, I know he's not great, but, like, Johnny's not great, and we're all holding hands with him and going, kumbaya, let's, let's solve this together. You're insufferable, but hey, you deserve help. Why are we not extending the same courtesy? And to your point, like, no one checks in on him. Maybe I get it at the start where they're like, oh, you visibly look fine. You were buffered by the shield. You're not showing any signs. No. By the midpoint of the movie, he has a scar half the length of his face with metal coming out of it. It's really noticeable. And they, like, he comes to the Baxter building, you know, they interact with him. Like, dude's not hiding the scar, and no one's going,
no,
hey guys, that's getting worse. Are you sure you're okay?
They're always like, what are you doing here? And they're like, first of all, what do you think he's doing here? All five of you went through this incredibly crazy thing. He has a giant scar, to your point, on the side of his face that is filled with liquid human metal. And they're always like, Victor, what are you doing here? Dude, take a wild fucking guess. You know, they ostracize him from the beginning. And yes, he's a dick. But like you said, they're all dicks. They're all super dickish to each other.
Victor deserved better.
Victor, yeah, justice for Victor. Hashtag justice for Victor. It's not okay. So he becomes Dr. Doom, which is one of the great Marvel villains. A villain of their own making. I completely agree with you on that. And then the film kind of descends into a fight between the five elements, right? Water, fire, air, rock, and metal. That's the basic premise behind it.
Yeah.
They have a big fight in a random place in New York City. A crowd gathers around them to watch, cheers on the Fantastic Four, but not Dr. Doom. Let me just say, if I showed up to this fight, I wouldn't be rooting for anyone because I'd be like, I don't know what's going on. There are no stakes in this movie. You know what I mean? It's not like Dr. Doom was like, and now I'm going to destroy New York.
No, it's very much, now I'm going to destroy you four.
You four. I'm going to kill the four of you. Okay, so Kelly, we're just like straight up walking down the streets of New York and there's a fight going on. We'll stop. Of course we'll stop. We're going to stop and look. But why am I rooting for the four in the uniforms and not the other guy? This is a fight between five friends. End of story. There's no stakes other than their, like, anger towards each other. And they decide to stop working on the machine after this encounter because they're like, our powers have value and we are going to stop great evil things. You guys so just ganged up on your ostracized friend and, like, melted him down. Oh, yeah, and it had those... Sorry. It was such a 2000s thing to have everybody make the audience guess what would happen if two things happened. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what happens when metal cools down really fast? Do you know what happens when you freeze rubber? Do you know what happened when the sun hits the lantern and superhero movies were like filled with like basic, like, I don't know, like grade 3 science questions for the audience as like pithy comebacks and it was very strange. But this is a fight between five friends, four of whom have ostracized and bullied their other friend turn him into a supervillain, and now they grace the cover of People magazine. How do these fucking characters inhabit the same world as the X-Men? I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't understand Fantastic Four fans. I really don't. Yeah. What is the appeal? Did you come out of this movie understanding? Because here's what happened. I watched this movie, then I went and watched the other Fantastic Four reboot from 2015, and then I went and watched the sequel, Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, and I do not to this day understand the appeal of these characters. They seem mean, privileged, so fucking privileged. Everyone loves them. They get this. They have the support not only of each other, but of like the U.S. Congress. You know what I mean? It's just, what is the appeal?
Truly do not get it.
Right? Okay, this has been plaguing me for the better part of 20 years, and I don't understand why I cannot get on board with this franchise. They're the first family of Marvel, Kelly.
I like Ben. Ben's great. Thing's great. I understand him as a character. You know, he had a whole arc of, like, personal growth and acceptance and has gone through struggle not just getting his rock powers, but prior he lost, you know, the love of his life. Like, I empathize with Ben.
I'm so happy that he lost the supposed love of his life because she was awful. Yeah. She was awful. You're engaged to this man. For better or for worse, I love you, baby. You catch a glimpse of him in the dark for a full 45 seconds, and you're like, no, I can never be with you again. You are superficial. You're horrible. It's not even like, wow, I don't think we can be romantically linked anymore. But as someone who has been your partner for this long, I want to be here to support you through this traumatic time. No, she straight up runs away. Good, Ben, good. She was not the one.
The thing that kept coming to my mind as like a real world equivalent, as much as you can have as a real world equivalent, are like people who get in like horrible like fires and have like ridiculous third degree burns and things on their faces, and the people who like leave them because of the scars. Yeah. Where I'm like, oh, you're a bad person.
You're a piece of shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Bad person.
Bad person. And maybe the nature of the relationship changes, but you don't like just straight up like run away forever. Like, what is wrong with you?
It's also like you left you didn't even wait for the scars to heal. You were just like, oh, you got burned. You're going to have. I don't want to try. I don't want to see what that's like.
And as happy as I am that he falls in love with Kerry Washington, whatever the hell her character's name is, the blind woman, which I guess I don't know that was necessary. Do we even want to unpack the fact that they got a sighted actress to play a blind actress? I know it wasn't an issue in 2005, but it's weird to me and it annoyed me the whole movie, especially since now we know who Kerry Washington is. Like, she's a star. Like, she wasn't when that movie came out, but she is now, and it's her face inflections are bizarre. I don't like them. I don't know what she's doing there.
It is strange, yeah. I'm very happy that for the most part, since 2005, we've all agreed that, like, oh, you're going to have a reoccurring blind character? Maybe they should be a blind actor.
Someone who knows that experience fully, truly.
Yeah.
Can replicate it on screen accurately for those of us who have never had that experience. It's not just, like, only have people who have that disability or who have that difference represent, but it'll probably inform the character better, just putting that out there from a purely capitalistic money-making standpoint. You know, if you have an actual blind person playing that character, they'll probably do a better job of it, thus making you more money. Putting that out there.
I will say, and maybe this is a controversial take, if the message we're supposed to take away from that, like, budding relationship is that despite your deformities, despite, you know, an unattractive or unconventional appearance, things like that, you can still find love and people that accept you fully. I do think making the person who falls in love with you blind kind of waters down the message.
It really does. It really does. It absolutely does. In a very a strange way. I don't know what to do with this movie, Kelly. I don't know what to do with these characters. I don't know if I'm ever going to get on board with the Fantastic Four as they are currently represented. I need someone to explain to me how this is as big as it is. I don't like it or, okay, like there are certain franchises where I'm like, I don't like it. Certain franchises where I'm like, I don't get it. This franchise has always left me so nonplussed as to completely delete all the information about it as soon as I've seen it. It's not bad. It's not good. It's, what's the word you used the other day? You were describing a tea and you were like, it's whelming.
Whelming. Not over, not under, but whelming.
It's whelming. This entire franchise is the most lukewarm, whelming cup of tea I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. No. I fully agree. And, you know, it's crazy. I feel like we've got it so good nowadays with, I feel so old saying that. We've got it so good nowadays with our superhero movies, our fancy animated Spider-Mans, yeah. You know. How privileged are we to get to be selective of our superhero movies?
Yes.
I can't help but feel hopeful, though, for, like, the MCU one, the upcoming one. And maybe that's irrational of me, because they've just never gotten it right with these characters, at least so far. You know, I've never felt drawn by them in any of the comics where they've guested that I've read. Like, there's nothing that I'm like, ah, yes, definitely, definitely excited for. And yet, Marvel Studios, I should say, has a tendency to take characters that are unknown.
Little known
is better, but little known, less commercial, mm-hmm. maybe is a better descriptor of that, with obscure stories or origins that are complicated or less desirable, maybe. And really, really make something good out of that.
So that being said, would you care to play the internet's favorite game? Favorite game, I believe, since the internet was created. Who would you cast in the Fantastic Four? Because, here's the thing. For the past decade, the internet has been screaming for John Krasinski from The Office to be cast as Reed Richards and Emily Blunt to be cast as Sue Storm. Maybe not a decade, but certainly since the reboot. So after mm-hmm. 2015, the disappointment of that Fantastic Four reboot was such that the internet was like, get John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. We want them, we want them, we want them, we want them. Last year, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, we saw John Krasinski as Reed Richards. I was there opening day. Kelly, or was it opening day? It was like a week later, but a heavily invested audience. Kelly, the people in the cinema gasped and started hooting. We were beyond excited. This is the thing that we've been asking for. We wanted to see John Krasinski, Jim from The Office, as Reed Richards. Oh my God, it was all happening. It was real. And Jesus, Lord Murphy, did that shit fall fucking flat. He didn't do a bad job. It was not his fault. There was just something about it that the more it was happening, it was like, oh, maybe we were wrong. Don't listen to us, Marvel. I think we were wrong. We don't want him. It was not him.
A little hollow.
It was weird. It was without depth. It was without, and everyone else on that panel, in that scene in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, I was delighted by the return of Patrick Stewart and Professor X. What's her name? Hayley Atwell as Captain Carter. Oh my God, it was amazing. So much love. And then they literally had Reed Richards pop up and it was like, ugh. So we can't trust the internet. Who are you casting in the new Fantastic Four?
Oh, it's so tough. There are some roles where I feel like I have a better idea of who I would want to see Like, it sounds like very likely Sue Storm is going to be Margot Robbie.
Yes.
That generally, if the gossip sites or whatever are too believed, that casting's all but confirmed. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of not mad at it.
I like that. She's excellent.
Of the rumored cast, she's definitely the one that I'm like, that makes the most sense, and I'm on board for that. I still like the idea of Emily Blunt.
I think she could pull it off. I think she could pull it off. Margot Robbie's just so good in so many things. Different, various things. She pulled off Harley Quinn. It's an incredibly difficult character to pull off successfully and not make it gimmicky.
I don't know. There was rumors for a long time that the Thing was going to be a gender-swapped Mila Kunis.
Oh, I feel like that's a made-up nonsense thing.
I don't know. I think she was pretty confirmed for the role and then turned it down.
Okay.
And I'm glad because
because I feel like that's messy. That's very messy.
Terrible. However, she would maybe make an interesting Sue Storm.
She would make an. I think she could pull off Sue Storm. Absolutely, could I would pull off Sue Storm.
Be very intrigued to see her as Sue Storm. The Thing is interesting. My like, not that I necessarily think it would be good, but I think it would be entertaining. Cast would be like Terry Crews.
Yes, yes, because you need someone who has the bulk who can pull off that kind of comedy. I agree. I agree with Terry Crews. I'm on board with your Terry Crews, for sure. Okay, so far, we've agreed on Margot Robbie and Terry Crews. It's shaping up to be pretty cool.
I don't know the name of the actor, and I feel really bad for that, but I watched Queen Charlotte the other day, Bridgerton prequel.
Okay, we'll get into that off recording because what? Why?
Okay. I've never watched Bridgerton.
That's hilarious!
Haven't seen an episode of Bridgerton.
Okay.
Anyway, right. The actor who played King George, I feel like based on just the only thing I've seen him in is this prequel.
Right.
He gives me the right vibe for Johnny Storm.
Okay.
Of, like, charismatic, a little bit of fuckboy, definitely, like, conventionally attractive, and the right age, but not, like, total dick.
Right.
So, right now in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I can kind of, like, I could see how that would work.
I can't get Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch out of my head because that's who he was in the reboot, and I thought he was so good. Now, obviously, him being Killmonger in Black Panther makes that complicated, but I don't know. I just really liked his interpretation of the character. I thought his interpretation of the character was really good, and I don't know. He wasn't that much of a fuckboy, so I appreciated it.
And fucking Reed Richards, man. I don't know.
The most impossible character to cast. I think it's the most impossible character to cast. I cannot think. The only person I can think of? Harold Ramis. Egon from Ghostbusters. Who's no longer with us. Rest in peace. But I feel like you gotta go super egghead with this guy. Super egghead.
Yeah.
With a little bit of charisma. But I can't think of anyone living that fits that bill. You know what I mean?
No, I totally understand what you mean. The rumored casting is Adam Driver. And I will say, I love Adam Driver.
Love Adam Driver.
But that is not the right cast.
I don't think so.
That feels bad to me.
Reed Richards is supposed to be the smartest man in the Marvel universe.
And I'm not saying Adam Driver can't pull off smart. I'm just saying
he pulls off emotionally smart.
Emotional intelligence, yes. But he has big himbo energy. Very big himbo energy.
I don't even know what that means. What is himbo energy?
What's the... I think technically the abbreviation is hunk and bimbo, I think.
Oh!
But I think that's...
He does have... He's just not... The thing is like, yeah, I find him to be as the characters that he's played, not as, like, the person himself, to be someone who's incredibly emotionally in tuned and aware. And that is the opposite of Reed Richards. Reed Richards is not emotionally attuned or aware. He is driven by his intellect and his ambition.
Yeah.
Entirely and totally.
Like, maybe this will help. I think in my head, the iconic TV himbo, and I'm going to say it and you're going to judge me for it, is Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah, oh, yes.
That's the energy Driver gives me, where he is emotionally in tune and caring and sweet and dumb as a brick.
Yes. Yes. That is absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know what? Now I think I finally answered my question that I answered earlier. Why can't I get on board with the Fantastic Four? It feels like the casting of it, these characters are so specific. So specific. The casting of it seems nearly impossible. You would need a Beatles-like level of chemistry to make these four really play beautiful music together. And I think that's been the issue all along.
I almost feel like it needs to be, like, unknowns. Like, people who, like, aren't carrying the baggage of their previous roles, which is not fair to those, like, to actors and actresses. But, like, where you're starting fresh and you're really, like, cherry-picking someone who, like, embodies those characters.
Yeah. And then they have to make sure that they play well off of each other. Very, very well off of each other. Ugh! What a tragic, tragic tale it is. The tale of the Fantastic Four. The movie franchise just can't get their shit together. How did you pair this?
So, I didn't really want to make, like, a hot tea. I just, like, wasn't in the mood. And Gong Fu is, like, not the vibe of this movie. That's just, like,
such a waste.
Such a bad choice. It's just a giant but also, waste. Like, it's not a teapot movie either, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's just not the right energy. And Arizona recently partnered with Marvel for a, like, hydration sports drink kind of line with, like, tea, and they're all kind of superhero themed but not.
Okay.
It's got a stupid fucking name. It's like Hero Hydration Super Elixir or something like that. Oh wow. That.
Okay.
It's just like 6 words long.
Okay.
There's 4 in the line and I was like, "Great. This is perfect." It's bottled RTD, but also Marvel, but still kind of tea. It feels like very much a theater drink-esque. Like, if you're not getting a fountain pop at the theater, you're getting, like, one of those, like, vitamin water kind of, like, things. And so I was like, great. Perfect. This will be wonderful. And I did, I want to say it was the mango passion fruit one. Maybe it was one of the other flavors. There's 4.
Super memorable. Kind of like the Fantastic Four, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, clearly I'm proving a point of where this convo is going. But it was so brutally and unpleasantly sweet.
Right.
Like, just so unbearably cloying. I took, like, a couple sips and was like, oh, God, how am I ever gonna drink this? I had to, like, water it down, like 1 for 1.
Whoa.
Like, 1 for 1 drink and just cold tap water.
Holy crap.
And then it was drinkable, but, like, it wasn't good. And in that way, it felt like the perfect pairing.
That is the ultimate perfect pairing. But what's crazy to me is, like, you work with flavors all the time. You work with very intense flavors all the time. You do not mind an overbrewed cup, an oversteep cup. Like, you're usually fine with that. How intense was this thing that you, of all people, like, let's be honest, had to water it down, Kelly?
It tasted like drinking, like, a fruit-flavored, like, corn syrup.
Fuck!
It was not pleasant. And I bought, so I tried to get one of each, and I couldn't find the lemon lime one, which is, like, the one that's, like, Hulk themed.
Okay.
So I'll say, because I'm blanking on the fucking flavor that I picked, right, because it was, like, so not good.
Right.
I picked, of the 4, the one that had Captain America on the bottle, because I'm like, it's Chris Evans.
It's Chris Evans,
There's no Fantastic Four bottle, you know?
Clearly.
It's like, Black Panther, Tony Stark, Captain America, the Hulk, I think. So I was like, We'll do the Captain America one. It's the closest in spirit.
Yeah.
No. Bad choice.
But perfect choice for this film. Yep. What a perfect choice for
bad
this film.
Bad but good.
Bad but good.
Good but bad.
Good but bad. Wow. Well, I had a tea that you introduced me to that I received the order for the day before. Because I drank it here with you on the podcast. Fell in love with it. It's Rishi's Sweet Starflower Oolong.
The tea is so much better than this movie.
The tea is so much better than this movie, but it keeps with my tradition of drinking really, really fine teas to watch really, really horrible shit. It worked because, honestly, that tea works with anything. That it's one of those just teas that I'm absolutely enraptured by. It's like Brutality's Violet Cremes to me, where I'm just like, I'm always in the mood for this tea. I'm always going to be satisfied by this tea. I'm always going to be happy with this tea. So it paired well for that. But honestly, the movie wasn't bad enough to justify my high to low ratio that I like to do when I watch a really, really bad movie. It's just the whole experience kind of fell flat. Will I watch it again? Here's the crazy answer. Yeah, probably. Probably a lot. Is
also yes.
I have watched it twice now in the past 6 months. I then went and watched the other Fantastic Four movies. And the other day I started the Silver Surfer one again, just because I was also like cleaning the house. I'm not saying like I'm sitting down and watching this movie, but I wanted to clean the house and I didn't want to spend like 30 minutes choosing something on Disney Plus before I started actually cleaning. And they're like, recently watched this. And I was like, yeah, sure. Fuck it. I'll put it on again. I don't know what it is about these characters that I'm so willing to keep going into their universe, yet don't understand why I'm watching it. And it's never truly that good. What kind of voodoo is this? Some kind of weird juju, obia, voodoo stuff happening with the Fantastic Four and me.
That's crazy because like, I don't think I would ever feel compelled to watch the 2015 one again. I really, again, not that that one was, like, particularly awful, but it doesn't have the same, like,
campiness.
Campy is a real good word for it. But whatever that sparkle is for, like, the universe or just the cinematography doesn't exist in that one for me. I watched it and I was like, it's fine. I'm good. I don't like this movie. I don't really like the sequel. But would I watch it again? Yeah.
For some fucked up reason.
There's some part of me that's like, for sure.
It's like, you know when you, like, and I think I've made this analogy before. You know when you, like, walk into your kitchen after you haven't been home in, like, a few days, and you're like, what's that smell? And it's bad, but it's not overwhelmingly bad. And it's not really bothersome. But, like, you're just like, you want to keep smelling the bad smell to, like, figure it out?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about this entire franchise. It's not, like, a bad, overwhelming garbage smell, but I do feel like maybe I didn't wipe down that counter properly with cleaning product before I left, so there's, like, a weird smell in my kitchen.
Or, like, something in the sink drain where something you're, in the like, sink it's drain. Just sitting there and it didn't get washed down properly.
Yes, and I'm going to keep smelling it. And it's bad, but it's not really bad, but it's bad enough that I want to, like, figure out what it is. That's how I feel about the Fantastic Four. They are the piece of cheese, tiny crumbs of cheese that you left on your counter after 3 or 4 days.
It's a great summary.
And on that note,
if you want to tell us why the Fantastic Four is good, you know, hit us up on Instagram at GeeksTeep. You know, we're really good about answering our DMs. I really would like to hear from someone who was like, no, this is the team of Marvel. Like, if that's your mindset, please help us understand. Or, you know, if you agree and you're like, this is just like good, bingeable background superhero content. I mean, help us feel validated too.
Just let us know. We know the Fantastic Four fans are out there. We know this. I've met one. I met a super fan back in the day. And yeah, try again. Do we have a hint for next week? I haven't even watched next week's thing. It's a watch. It's not a read, but
yeah, I think I'm going to be really specific without being specific. Okay. And just say we're continuing the tradition of watching a Ghibli movie. There. Which one? Find out in 2 weeks.
Exactly. Until then, have a great 2 weeks, everyone.
Bye.